Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy, and we are here to talk about Week 11 in college baseball. It was a busy week around the country. Conference battles in the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC, some really big ones like Virginia and Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State and Texas, and Tennessee and Auburn. We're going to get to all of those here on this week's edition, or today's edition, of the podcast. It was a big weekend, a busy weekend around the country, as we said goodbye to April and hello to May. And here at the business end of the schedule, like, everything feels like it has outsized implications on a conference title race, on the hosting race, on the bubble race in the NCAA tournament. There's just a lot happening. And so we're going to dive into that today here on the Baseball America College Podcast. And Joe, it just felt like this weekend your head kind of had to be on a swivel. There was a lot happening. Last weekend maybe wasn't quite so busy, but this weekend it really just felt like, okay, we're in the business end, and everything carries a lot of weight right now.
Yeah, for sure. It certainly felt like that kind of weekend. I mean, there were some series that frankly were pretty important that I just didn't see that much of because the timing was such that, there were other things going on that felt like they took on greater importance. And so even though things were pretty spaced out, that's one of the things I do appreciate about this time of year, is that, like, sure, things are pretty clustered together on Fridays, and things even on Sundays are pretty clustered together. But, Saturday you've got stuff from beginning to end. And so the games kind of stretch out a little bit more. And even on Sunday, you'll get stuff like, the SEC Network starts at, 2 or 3 o'clock or what have you. So because there are more games on TV and getting those windows, they are a little more spread out, even though you're still kind of having them clustered together to where you can't see everything. And yeah, it felt like a big weekend. These couple of weekends, this one and then the next couple of coming up, are really feel like when things start to truly come together in college baseball. And then, of course, you get the last week in the regular season, which sometimes can kind of feel like, let's just get on with this and get to the conference tournaments. That's kind of the way it goes there. But these few weekends right here are when, the postseason picture firms up a little bit. We start to really have an understanding of what the postseason picture is going to look like. And this weekend certainly felt like a step in that direction.
I think part of that is because we're still early enough that, like, I can squint and imagine a lot of these teams going to regionals or hosting a regional or still winning a conference title. Like, they all still have that path. And in the next couple of weeks, some of those teams will fall off of being able to host. They'll just be clearly in, or they'll fall off of the bubble, or, the conference title race will get down to two teams. And right now you can look at so many of these teams that have those kinds of possibilities. And so I think that is part of what made this weekend so busy. What's going to make next weekend maybe potentially busy is that dynamic. A lot to talk about here, and let's not belabor the point, I suppose, with such a busy weekend, Joe. Let's get to it, and let's start in Charlottesville. Virginia and Virginia Tech were playing what felt like the biggest addition of that rivalry, at least in the 21st century, possibly ever. We talked about this on the preview pod, both teams coming in ranked in the top 10. That had never happened before this century. And you know, both teams competing for hosting spots, for, you know, ACC positioning. They were tied in the standings. And this weekend, they meet in Charlottesville. Virginia Tech comes out with the win. They split the first two games. Virginia Tech won the opener on Friday. UVA comes back on Saturday with a win in Ryan Zimmerman Day. They were honoring UVA great Ryan Zimmerman, retiring his number. And then on Sunday, Virginia started the day with four runs in the first two innings. And I kind of thought, especially considering Virginia Tech's struggles in series finales in ACC play, they were just 2-6 in game threes going into yesterday in conference play. I thought, you know, okay, UVA's got a four-run lead. This is just going to be another tough Sunday for Virginia Tech, but it wasn't. They were able to flip that script. They went into the bullpen. They shut UVA down the rest of the day pretty much, and they go on and win the series in Charlottesville. First time Virginia Tech beats UVA since 2015 in a series. And Virginia Tech now is into the top five in the Baseball America Top 25, into the top five in RPI, and they are just on an incredible hot streak in ACC play. Just an all-around phenomenal weekend for the Hokies.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to the big time, Virginia Tech, right? I mean, not to take anything away from them winning a series against Miami, but it kind of felt like that was the announcement of Virginia Tech. They had been playing well to that point. They've really been playing well since they lost a series to Georgia Tech earlier this season. But the Miami series win was like everyone taking notice. And this really kind of felt like Virginia Tech really reaffirming that and making it clear that, oh, this is actually one of the best teams in college baseball. I mean, everything really kind of opened up for them after this weekend where, you know, coming into the weekend, it was like, you know, this team looks like it can host, but kind of feels like they might need a result this weekend or certainly would help. Well, now they're in position, like barring something unforeseen, if they continue on this track, Virginia Tech's going to be hosting a regional. They could be a top eight seed, all of the above. And that's, you know, that's huge. And we talked going into the weekend about how this was a Virginia Tech team that had a lot of margin for error with the way they played. And I think that's precisely what you saw this weekend, was that margin for error coming into play, because it's not like they knocked the cover off the ball. I mean, they put up some decent run totals. It's not like they were winning 3-1, but it's not like they were putting up 12 runs a game either. Like, they hit the ball okay, not great. You know, Drew Hackenberg didn't pitch particularly well in the middle of the game of the series, but they got good outings from their bullpen. You know, Henry Weicker with a big time outing, Graham Fierved with a couple of good outings. So the bullpen stepped up, and they didn't make a single error in 27 innings. So the games didn't go 100% to quote unquote script for Virginia Tech because they didn't hit the ball like they normally do, but that was okay because they did a lot of other things pretty well. And when we talk about a team having a lot of margin for error, that's kind of what we're talking about, where, you know, they can shape shift a little bit and win games a little different ways. And I think we saw that over the weekend. And I think it also is valuable that, you know, that they, Virginia Tech won a game they controlled. They lost a game that Virginia more or less controlled. And then, as so often happens in conference play, Sunday in the series comes down to who can win this rock fight. And they won the rock fight. You know, they just got it done. Wasn't pretty necessarily, but they got it done. That's so valuable because that's kind of what you have to do to be in the position Virginia Tech's in. So it felt like just a breakthrough weekend for the Hokies. It's a team that's playing well for a long time, but I felt there was something particular about last weekend that really announced them as one of the top teams in the sport.
I thought it was really significant that they won kind of going off script, like you're saying, that, you know, if you look at what Virginia Tech had done coming into this weekend, it was a lot of, you know, they needed to win with Griffin Green and Drew Hackenberg on the mound. Like I said, they were just 2-4 in game threes coming into the weekend in conference play. And you know, they very nearly, you know, it easily could have gone away from them when UVA goes up 4-0 in the second inning. They were able to right the ship there. They're a team that fields well, but yeah, to play clean baseball, they hadn't played a clean ACC series this season, despite the fact that this is a team that ranks in the top 10 in the country in fielding. And this is a team that averaged coming into the weekend 2.16 home runs per game. They hit four this weekend. Four is a nice number. You know, there's no shame in that, but it's certainly not what their average is. And, you know, they were still able to score their runs. They were still able to to win, even with Drew Hackenberg having the worst start of the season. And so I think all of that was really big. And by the way, I mean, Griffin Green only gave up one run in seven innings, so it looks like a really nice start, but he worked around a lot of trouble. And you know, he walked four batters in that game, and he was just able to keep UVA off the board. So even he, like, who had a solid start, it wasn't the perfect start, but he was able to go out and get it done. And, you know, UVA had only lost twice this season at home. And that was one of the reasons why I thought UVA was going to win this weekend, was because they were so difficult to beat at home. So for Virginia Tech to go on the road and then have to do things in a different way than they've had to do them all season and still come away with the win against a team that is competing at the for all of the very same things that they are, at the top of the ACC, to host, to be a top eight seed, all of that, I thought that spoke volumes about the Hokies. And not only was this a breakthrough, I think there's something to what you're saying there, Joe. Like, yeah, beating Miami, like, made everyone realize that, okay, Virginia Tech is for real. I think this makes everyone realize, okay, Virginia Tech is even more for real. Like, this is an Omaha contender kind of team. But they're on their way to a real breakthrough season. They have not been to the NCAA tournament since 2013. John Scheff has been there. You know, he was hired in 2017. 2018 was his first season. I feel like there's been a steady build under Scheff, but they hadn't been able to make the postseason. And, you know, maybe they would have last year in a more normal ACC year for a long time. It looked like they were going to. Ultimately, they miss. You know, they've had high draft picks under Scheff. They've done a lot of things that have shown that the quality of the program is increasing, but they look like they are well on their way to a true breakthrough and getting back. I mean, they are close to a postseason lock right now. And I mean, they have everything lined up for them to be a top eight national seed even.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, they hosted back in 2013, but it wasn't like this. You know, it was a good team, but it was a team that kind of worked its way into hosting position. This is a team that, you said it, I mean, this is a team that could dream about Omaha, and nobody's going to look at them sideways. By the way, I think I figured out the fix for Virginia. Like, they should just make every day Ryan Zimmerman day. Like, who says no? Like, I mean, that seems like that was probably the solution there. I mean, they won on Saturday when it was Ryan Zimmerman day, so I don't really see.
Yeah, that was,
seems like a bulletproof argument.
That was, I believe, declared by the governor. They would have to get his approval, I believe.
Yeah,
I could be incorrect about that, but I think that was like a statewide proclamation.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of red tape to have to go through. But anyway, they should think about it, is all I'm saying. That seems to be the problem that was happening this weekend. But I mean, Virginia Tech's still going to have a Sunday problem. Like, I don't think it's going away as long as they're continue like kind of grasping for things here. But like, we see teams deal with this all the time. I mean, it's become a cliche that Teddy and I talk about, like, there aren't as many Sunday starters as you think there are. And there are teams that do figure out a formula on Sundays. There are just as many that don't. But so that's something to kind of monitor as time goes on. The good news in a regional, especially if you're hosting it, is that you can set up your pitching to where, depending on who your four seed is, one of Green or Hackenberg is set up to throw that third game, the regional final, hypothetically. Or even if you don't, and you've got to throw those guys 1-2, if you win those two games, the team that is coming out to face you in the regional final has played one more game than you and is theoretically not going to be in any better position than you are, probably. So that's the benefit there of the regional format if you're going to host. And it's one of the reasons why hosting is pretty important, I think, for the Hokies. I mean, they play well at home, and Blacksburg being a particularly difficult place to get to and what have you, I think, is probably also an advantage for teams going there. So that's all helpful. So the Sunday thing is a thing. They overcame it this weekend. I think that's big. And that's something that we'll have to kind of continue, because I'm sure they'll continue playing around with what they want to do on Sundays moving forward, because you're always tinkering a little bit. And so that's kind of the one thing, but on this past weekend didn't end up mattering.
I have a feeling we're going to have a month to get into this, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this. But if you're looking at, okay, Virginia Tech is now into the top five, the Baseball America top 25 for, I believe, the first time since 1982. Like, just to give you an indication of how long that, like, you know, it's been since they've done something like this. But a top five team in May is basically by definition a team that is capable of going to Omaha and probably competing for something while they're in Omaha. On the other hand, this is a team that has basically no postseason experience and has a clear deficiency. I don't know what the ceiling is here, and I don't want to put a limit on them. They haven't lost a series since they got swept at Georgia Tech on the opening weekend of ACC play. That was in the middle of March. On the other hand, I don't know that I love how they are going to match up in a super, even in a regional, depending on the draw. That said, everything you said, Joe, is right. They play really well at home. It's a tough place to play. They've made that, you know, at times into a really good atmosphere. It's not consistent yet, but I mean, like, I could see how that would be a really tough regional environment. We'll just have to see. But there are concerns I have about them as they get into the postseason, but maybe those are unfounded. I don't know. It's definitely a thing that I am tracking here as we push closer to that. On the flip side, Joe, UVA is now in a bit of rut is too strong, but so they went out to this incredible start. What we can remember, they were 26-3 when they went to Miami at the start of April for a huge series. They got swept at Miami, and they've gone on to lose. That was the start of them losing three of their last four ACC series. The one in the win column in that time is a sweep at home of North Carolina, but they lost at Pitt, at Miami, and now to Virginia Tech. RPI slipped to 20. They fell behind Virginia Tech in the standings. They're just in this bit of a skid here. Are you concerned? They're 7-9 over the last 4 weeks in totality. Are you concerned about UVA?
Yeah, a little, because I just think the results don't lie here, where this is a sustained period of backsliding after nothing but one-way traffic, basically, for the entire first half of the season. So I think you have to be a little bit concerned, and it's some of the things that we've talked about. We don't need to completely relitigate all of that, but, you know, rotation backsliding, the bullpen is pretty good, but I'm starting to get a little concerned that it's dependent on a small handful of guys in the bullpen maybe. So like, that's a little bit of a concern, I guess. So, whereas Virginia Tech, I think, has it kind of expanded our understanding of how they can win games, because I think they're pitching a little bit better maybe than we thought. Like, maybe there's some bullpen depth here. Like, the defense is a real asset. Virginia does a lot of those same things, but I wonder if, like, if this team isn't really scoring runs, like, you know, what path is there for them? And so I do have some concerns. I like the team in general. I don't think it was a complete mirage how well they were playing early in the season, albeit against a relatively soft early season schedule. But I mean, they're in a weird spot now. Like, truly, they've got their finals break this weekend, and I could see it going either way. Like, on one hand, maybe it's just time to, like, you know, disconnect from baseball for a little bit for this group and, like, try to hit the reset button the last couple of weeks. On the other hand, there's some urgency about needing a result. You know, they've got Clemson coming up in a couple of weekends. That on paper is a favorable matchup there for them to get a result on the board. Because if they go in there and they, especially if they sweep that series against Clemson, like, I don't know what the RPI would necessarily do. It's a good RPI series against Clemson, even though Clemson's not particularly good. That would probably be, okay, we're going to host, it's fine, like, all that kind of stuff. So because there's that urgency behind that result, like, on the other hand, so I could see it that you'd want to kind of detach a little bit. On the other hand, like, I think there's probably some urgency to, hey, let's get back on the field and, like, get this figured out. So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. They're off this weekend, but they are. And it is going to be interesting to see where is Clemson in the pecking order 2 weeks from now, because while they're sitting on the sidelines, other teams are going to be making their case. And so theoretically, it's not going to help or hurt Virginia because they're not going to play much. But on the other hand, like, that's just not how perception works sometimes. And so teams are going to be doing things around them, and it'll be interesting to see what we make of the Cavaliers when they come out of that.
Definitely just it just feels like this was a massive series in terms of a lot of things. And it was, but just
huge implications in this, and that's why we love this time of year, and that's why we love these rivalry series and all the rest of it. So great series in Charlottesville, big time win for Virginia Tech as that moves forward. All right, let's turn our attention to what happened in Knoxville. Tennessee was taken on Auburn, and it was a top 25 series. Obviously, Tennessee has been what they've been, and that has been well talked about. And Auburn coming off or coming on strong here just made for a really intriguing series in Knoxville, and that's what we got. Tennessee won the opener on Friday night. If you look at the final score, you might think that it wasn't a close game at all, but Auburn actually led that game at the seventh inning stretch, and then Tennessee hit a whole bunch of home runs and went on to win 17-4. Auburn comes back on Saturday, wins that game, sets up a rubber game. Just the second time this season that that Tennessee has had to play a rubber game. And that game was close. It was 3-3 in the bottom of the eighth. Jordan Beck hit a home run, and Auburn can't answer. Tennessee goes on to wins the series. They're 40-4, 19-2 in the SEC. Remarkable run continues, but I gotta say, Auburn acquitted itself about as well as it possibly could have in a series loss. I don't think they want to talk about moral victories. I'm not here to suggest it really was. There were some tangible benefits from this, and we can get into all of that, but I came away very impressed with Auburn and obviously continuing to be impressed with Tennessee.
I mean, it's about as impressive a series loss as you could possibly have, right? I mean, it truly was three close games. If you look, under the hood on Friday's game, three incredibly close games. And I think just as impressive that Auburn came back and played well on Saturday and Sunday, because it would have really been easy to kind of mentally fold up the tent a little bit after Friday. It wasn't just that you lost 17-4 because Tennessee hit a million home runs late in the game. It's also that, you had two pitcher injuries on Friday with, Hayden Mullins going out with an elbow injury that, in an in-game interview, Butch Thompson kind of alluded to, like, yeah, it doesn't look good, even though he had not been officially evaluated. He was doing what I call the universal symbol for not good news. Hayden Mullins was doing the thing where he's, shaking his arm out and wiggling his fingers and all that kind of stuff. And then later in the game, Blake Burkhalter, their arguably best relief arm, pulled a hamstring, it appeared, and successfully argued to stay in the game, but then gave up a home run and was removed immediately afterward. So he's seems more day to day. But so you take that loss that was crushing, you take the injuries, so you're up against it the rest of the weekend. It would have been pretty easy for that team, even if obviously they're not making a conscious decision. Like it just would have been really easy for them to kind of fold up and not play particularly well the next 2 days. But they did, and it wasn't just that they came out and played well. They stood up to Tennessee in a way that a lot of teams don't, right? I mean, Tennessee in that second game, scored some late runs and kind of took control of that game. And it's Auburn that comes up with the bigger hits in the ninth inning, including a Bobby Pierce 3-run home run that created like a kerfuffle, maybe is the right word. Like he threw the bat towards a Tennessee dugout, and I don't think he meant to throw it in the dugout. I think it kind of caromed in such a way that made it carry all the way to the dugout. And then Tony Vitello went and picked up the bat and tossed it back towards the celebratory huddle at the plate. It was like a minor thing that ultimately led nowhere, thankfully. But so, Auburn really stands up to Tennessee in that game and got some big hits late. And then they were right there again on Sunday. And it just so happened that, Jordan Beck got into a ball, right? But they played about as well as you could play those last 2 days. And I think you're right that they probably don't want to talk about moral victories. But man, I mean, you come out of that weekend thinking that as long as Auburn can piece this thing together and can be healthy enough on the mound, which is an open question, this is going to be a team to deal with the rest of the season. And, a team that certainly is not going to quit and is going to be a tough out.
You talked about the Auburn injuries on the mound, and I thought that Tennessee, I mean, we know what Tennessee is at this point of the year. We've talked about them plenty, but we're still like learning new things. I mean, every week you get something new. And so this week for Tennessee, what we got was that Chase Dollander did not start again, his second missed start after getting hit in the arm by a line drive 2 weeks ago against Alabama. Blade Tidwell again started in his place. And a week ago, he was excellent against Florida in his first SEC start of the season. This week, he struggled with his command, probably just a blip, probably just a hiccup as the preseason All-American gets back to full strength and 100% after that shoulder soreness that cost him the start of the season. But, you know, at the same time, it's a reminder that this is, you know, it's a process. He's not all the way back yet. And, you know, progress is not always linear and all the rest of that. So that was one thing. The other thing is that Ben Joyce, the headline is that he threw 105.5 on Sunday, and that's probably the fastest pitch ever recorded in college baseball, and that, you know, only like one guy has ever thrown harder than that in Major League Baseball and all the rest of that. And that's nice and all. Ben Joyce is a flamethrower. We've seen him hit some crazy numbers already this season. I frankly don't care that much that it's 105 versus 103. What I do care about is that Ben Joyce threw four scoreless innings to finish Sunday's game. That's twice as long as Tennessee had asked him to throw yet this season. It was clearly his best outing, and it was probably the highest leverage situation Tennessee had inserted him into this year and kept him in. And so if he's, I don't want to say that, like, if you look at his stats, he's been very good all season long, but he just hasn't been asked to do anything like this. If that's going to change, if Tennessee is now going to be able to trust him in leverage situations and in lengthy leverage situations, I think that continues to change this, this Tennessee pitching staff, and obviously for the better.
Max and Millie back there are fired up about Ben Joyce. Fired up in the background. They had to have their voices heard on that one. Shout out Max and Millie. Yeah, I mean, the Tennessee bullpen, I feel like, has been such a in a team full of storylines, right? I mean, I did a radio interview this morning and they asked me about Tennessee, and I just said, like, the guys who cover Tennessee day to day are really fortunate this year because there's just so much to cover with this team. There's like storylines all over the place. And one of them, I feel like, nationally, that has been underreported, and I understandably, it's not the sexiest thing, but I mean, their bullpen has just been really, really good. I mean, this weekend was really the first time where it felt like somebody really got to Camden Sewell and Redmond Walsh. And those two guys are not, you know, those are on the Tennessee grand scheme of things, those guys are soft tossers, you know? And they got for the first time in what felt like a long time. But then you talk about Ben Joyce now being fully operational, maybe. You know, and Mark McLaughlin has been really good this year. You look at his peripheral numbers and they're kind of insane, honestly, how good he's been. And, you know, Kirby Connell has been really, really effective. And, you know, Will Mabry has come on strong. I mean, a 40-3 strikeout to walk ratio. I mean, come on. The bullpen is just, I mean, they could truly do bullpen games and be totally fine. Because the other thing about them is that they don't, outside of Ben Joyce, like most, I guess McLaughlin and Connell to a certain degree, but when you start to talk about Sewell and Walsh and Mabry and Xander Seacrest, who's starting some midweek games, like those are all guys that can give you multiple innings, and that's going to make them really, really dangerous. Among like the million and one reasons why Tennessee is extremely dangerous as a team, like a not insignificant part of it is how good the bullpen is and how deep the bullpen is.
All right, so I mentioned that Auburn wasn't just looking at moral victories here. There were some tangible things that came out of this. By playing Tennessee for three games, generally your RPI goes up, their number one. But by beating Tennessee on the road, your RPI is guaranteed to soar. Auburn really got an RPI boost this weekend. They have 12 SEC wins now. They have a premium RPI. They have a premium strength of schedule. It's number 7. It is all very much breaking for them to host a regional. They haven't done that since 2010, but Auburn is number 4 in RPI right now. So much like I said with Virginia Tech about how being a top 8 seed is very clearly on the board, the path for Auburn is definitely there. They have a big series this weekend at home against Arkansas. Previously, I going into this weekend, I'd kind of thought that Auburn really needed like 3 wins out of this Arkansas-Tennessee stretch. I no longer think that. They're doing just fine. You know, they need like four wins to host. If they want to be a top eight seed, they probably need something out of the Arkansas series, but, or they're going to need to do something in Hoover, but just to host, they're doing just fine. They're like, they basically just need to probably play 500 ball the rest of the way in the SEC, and they will host. And that is part of what this weekend got them. So yes, it's disappointing. They probably feel like they had a strong chance to win this series. They had a better chance to beat Tennessee than any other team so far this season. They didn't get it done. I'm sure they don't feel great about that, but there are real good things that came out of this weekend for Auburn. And I think that can't be lost just because they took two, unfortunate late losses.
No, I think that's right. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, you compare it to the series against Alabama for Tennessee, where that's the other rubber game that Tennessee has faced this year. And, you know, Alabama wins. I guess it was a Friday game. It was Easter weekend, so I was confused if it was a Thursday or Friday game. But yeah, Friday game. And then Tennessee just came out and just ran Alabama off the field the next 2 days. This was different. You know, obviously they didn't know they were going to get a rubber game until losing the Saturday game. But, you know, Auburn came out and competed the last two games of the series. They didn't fold up like we talked about. And yeah, as a result, things are right there. You know, don't get swept this weekend against Arkansas. You know, if you pick a game off there, you really feel good, because then you feel like, okay, you've built something up to where you could maybe, you know, lose a series against Alabama or Kentucky down the stretch and probably still be okay. So, you know, if you don't want too much pressure in the last two weekends, you know, maybe don't get swept this weekend against Arkansas. That would be probably helpful. But even if you do, like you do have a couple of favorable series down the stretch that make you feel like Auburn's in pretty good shape to finish it off and end up playing at home in June.
I mean, they've come close in the last decade. That there have definitely been close calls. I mean, the year they had Casey Mize, his draft year, I think they were, they got sent to NC State as a two seed. And, you know, you can't, NC State was number 16 that year in the host line. And you can't line, they don't line it up quite that neatly, but it sure felt like they did that year. That was an acknowledgement that, like, hey, Auburn, you were the next team that would have hosted here. That was probably as close as it's been come. But, you know, this is a team that's been to Omaha under Butch Thompson, and, you know, getting to host is a different deal than getting to Omaha. That's obviously the pinnacle, but to have that kind of regular season success, I think, is significant again in the development of the program. It's such a great ballpark there on the plains. I think it would be great if Auburn is able to get this done. And it's also important to remember that this is a team that not just me, though me included, picked to finish at or near the bottom of the SEC West. And they have absolutely far exceeded those expectations and are showing that they can compete with, you know, even the best team in the country on the road and compete very, very well. So a lot to be said about the turnaround Auburn has executed this year. All right, we got a lot more to get to here. We're gonna keep it moving. Got a big series in the Big 12 to talk about here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Jill, let's go to the Big 12. And a week ago, things were much different in the Big 12 race. TCU had just beaten Oklahoma State in Stillwater. And, you know, there was a lot to feel good about, you know, from a TCU perspective. They were in first place. Oklahoma State was in a tough spot. I did note that Oklahoma State controlled its own destiny, but they were staring a tough slate, you know, playing Texas and Texas Tech. Well, this weekend, they went to Austin. They come away with a series win. And not just a series win, they swept the series in a big, big way, did Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma State now is in first place in the Big 12. Texas, which a week ago probably felt like it could get back into the title race in the Big 12, they are reeling. They are 9-9. They're out of the title race. And just the way it all went down has to feel especially bad for the Horns. But let's start with the Pokes, Joe. They really brought their bats to Austin in a big way. And they finished the sweep, notably on Sunday. They were down 7-0. In the sixth or the seventh inning? Going into the seventh inning. And they put 10 runs on the board. Griffin Dorsherin finished that with a grand slam that gave them the lead. And just a really big response for Oklahoma State to go out and finish a sweep in Austin. And interestingly, that's the fourth time in seven seasons that Oklahoma State has swept Texas. So this is not novel, but it is a huge, huge, huge result for the Cowboys.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think it's, you know, it hasn't necessarily been one-way traffic for Oklahoma State because, you know, we've talked about, you know, losing a series to TCU that the previous weekend. So it's not like this team has just kind of been on cruise control, but it does feel like this team has been, what's the right word I'm looking for, progressing as the season has gone on. And I got asked actually on the same radio interview I referenced earlier, I got asked about Oklahoma State and what is special about them. And I think one thing I point to, I think we saw it this weekend, is that it feels like a lineup that is getting better as the season goes on. And I think there's a lot of things that feed into that, right? It's getting healthy. So Griffin Dorsching is back in the lineup. It's guys who are maybe finding their footing. Rock Reggio had some moments this weekend. Like perhaps he's coming into his own a little bit. Nolan McClain has gotten a little more comfortable. You know, he's starting to come around a little more and be a little more consistent. Like the swing and miss is still very much a thing in his game. It just is going to be, but he has become a little more consistent. After leveling off for a little bit, Jake Thompson has kind of started to swing it better again. You know, David Mendham, who's kind of the overlooked transfer in the lineup against beside Dorsching, has been really, really solid this year and had three more home runs over the weekend. And so it feels like a lineup that, even though I look at this lineup and there's not really a superstar here, like by most definitions, it's a pretty good lineup 1 through 9. And we see when they're fully operational what they're capable of, because that's what I think what we saw over the weekend. And they were really prepared to prey on, you know, one of Texas's biggest weaknesses right now, which is what are you getting in the bullpen and who do you trust out there? And boy, when they had their window, they really pounced, because it just looked for all the world like that series that we've seen 100 times, like every year we see it 100 times. Heck, we had a series like this with Georgia Tech and Miami that we'll talk about here shortly, where one team wins the first two games. And then in the third game, you know, the team that won the first two games just doesn't come out and play very well, and they can't sweep. It looked like that was going to be the case here. And then, boy, that when that switch flipped, it really flipped in a big way for Oklahoma State. And I mean, it's a huge result, because this is a situation where a sweep is a really big difference from just winning 2 out of 3 in terms of things like the Big 12 title race and hosting and all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oklahoma State was kind of on the fringe of the hosting race a week ago. Like, I figured they probably would find a way, but their RPI was an issue. Well, that got resolved. They're back into first place in the Big 12 standings. And yeah, TCU holds the tiebreaker, but they have a game advantage on TCU right now. And it's now just a 6-game sprint to the finish in the Big 12 for both teams. And Oklahoma State has to feel good about the way it's playing. We'll get to the way TCU's playing in a minute. They're not going to feel as good coming out of this week. So just a huge momentum swing on Sunday, the way that went down. But, you know, a lot to be said just about the way Oklahoma State went about its business the first two games. They got to Pete Hansen a bit on Friday. That game was higher scoring than we would have thought. You know, Hansen and Justin Campbell going at it would have figured that'd be more of a pitcher's duel. Bryce Osmond was really good on Saturday. One tricky thing here is that Victor Medeiros did leave Sunday's start with some sort of injury after one inning. Looked like maybe it was a back injury or something. We'll have to wait and see what comes of that and how that affects Oklahoma State moving forward. But just a big weekend for the Pokes there in Austin.
Yeah, and I mean, the Medeiros thing will be interesting to see because that is, I mean, look, they showed that they can win games and compete well when they don't get the starting pitching. But you kind of thought that maybe, you know, and Medeiros has been a wild card this season. Like, he's had good and bad. But with Osmond now rounding into form, like, it kind of seems like Osmond, this, you know, who knows really, because there have been ups and downs with him. And last week against TCU, he was just kind of okay. But the consistency is there for him in a way it hasn't been. So you looked at Campbell being as solid as could be, Bryce Osmond rounding into form a little bit. With Medeiros, you just kind of were like, okay, you know, if we can just mitigate the bad starts, like, we're in pretty good shape here in the rotation. Now with him being injured, it does throw things a wrench into things a little bit. You know, we've talked about liking the bullpen there for Oklahoma State, but that is where they are going to be a little bit vulnerable as they move forward. But they showed this weekend that, you know, it's something that they can overcome in a couple of different ways. Obviously they can hit their way out of it. You know, like the flexibility in the bullpen, it also feels like a bullpen that's starting to take form a little bit now, especially with, you know, a guy like Nolan McLean starting to feel like he's getting a little more comfortable in his role as he's continued to get, you know, healthier and more accustomed to pitching. So it feels like a lot of things are coming together for Oklahoma State. It feels like this is going to be a photo finish in the Big 12, honestly. Like, I'd believe you if you told me that we end up with a tie atop the standings and it goes to a tiebreaker again, which is something that's happened in this league. It feels like quite a bit. And it's going to be a weird
hashtag
one.
We've talked, one true champion.
Indeed. We've talked about it before, but it bears mentioning again that, you know, TCU is going to be in the clubhouse last weekend of the regular season because they're at a conference last weekend. And you know, Oklahoma State doesn't have a conference series this weekend. So there's going to be a little bit of weirdness kind of in the race here. But it would not shock me in the slightest if we end up with a situation where we're going to tiebreakers to determine the actual champion because we ended up with a tie.
32 runs this weekend for Oklahoma State. That's a season high in a 3-game series. Texas, that's a really rough one for them. Obviously, it's really rough the way that the sweep happens because, you know, you get up 7 runs in, you know, after 6 innings and you figure, you know, you're on your way to a win. That is not how it went down. And now Texas has to pick themselves up. The thing is, a lot is still on the table that Texas wants to accomplish. It's still there. Like I said, the Big 12 is gone for them. That's not happening. But they're, RPI is 21, and I can't rule out a team with an RPI of 21 from the hosting race. They are just 500 in the Big 12. They would have to have a magnificent finish, but, like, it's there if they can get it together. And, you know, the talent is still there. I don't fully understand what's gone wrong here, other than clearly the pitching staff has not lived up to its billing. Like, that is the most obvious thing here, but it's been confounding in a lot of ways to see Texas go through this. They'd had difficult series losses before, you know, obviously the series at Kansas State springs to mind, but this is the first time they've really gotten exposed at home. Previously Dish Falk had been a really good place for them. That obviously changed this weekend. And I mean, I don't like Texas's outlook going forward, but That especially is part of the problem now for Texas.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird deal because you look at the 9-9 in the Big 12, and you know, you kind of expect them, when you look at the overall resume, it's going to reflect also that kind of mediocrity, and it just really doesn't, and suggests that if this team were just two or three games better in the Big 12 record, like, you know, we probably wouldn't be having these types of conversations about them. But it is reminiscent. I've made this comparison before. It is reminiscent a little bit of last year's Florida in terms of, you know, consensus number one coming into the season that just was good, not great throughout most of the season. And Florida snuck in and hosted, but we saw how that went. It, you know, you have to wonder if this starts to be kind of the type of fate that might face Texas. Like, maybe they get into the hosting race, maybe they don't, but is a quick exit coming in the postseason, or do they kind of get it together a little bit? Because the other comparison I would have with last year's Florida is there were these little windows where, even as we realized, okay, this team is not the best team in college baseball, all capital letters, but they're still pretty good. They would have these moments, and Texas has had these moments, right? I mean, they won a series with TCU. They have the early season performance. They're one of the only teams to beat Tennessee, you know, right? I mean, they've had these moments, but then you kind of think there's these lows where it was like the K-State series, and you're like, well, yeah, that's weird, but like, that's probably the rock bottom. And then they give a bunch of runs to Air Force in the midweek, and you're like, yeah, okay, that's probably the bottom. And then you have Sunday's game where it's like, okay, this might actually be the bottom, but they keep finding it a little bit. And that's the part that's kind of troublesome, is it just kind of feels like you're not getting the rebound off of those rock bottoms. Whether, you know, we want to argue which one's lower than the other, I'm not that interested in that, but they're not getting the rebound in the same way. And so you just kind of wonder if this just is what it is the rest of the way.
This is a team that was 11-0 at one point. It's not like they never showed it. They showed it. It just they haven't been able to sustain it. And obviously that's tough over a 56 game season and all the rest of it, but they are really fighting it right now, and they are running out of time to course correct. Especially so because they have a bye week coming up. So we'll have to see what comes of Texas from here. Let's stay in the Big 12, kind of, sort of. TCU, as we mentioned, stepped outside of Big 12 play this weekend. They went to Florida State for a top 25 series in Tallahassee. And it was not a good time. TCU had a very difficult week coming off of that high in Stillwater. They lost on Tuesday to DBU. They go to Tallahassee. They lose 10-0 on Friday night. Parker Messick was outstanding for Florida State. They lose a tight game 7-5 on Saturday. That was a game they led early, but it never really established who was in control of that game. And they were not able to pull off the win there. And then they were losing on Sunday when a combination of rain and travel curfew led that game to be canceled after four innings. Obviously, maybe they would have come back. It was a one-run game when it was canceled. But as it stands, it's an 0-3 week for TCU after just a huge momentum lift, you would think, of beating Oklahoma State and Stillwater to take the lead in the Big 12. Instead, they get hit with this. And now, like I've said, have fallen a game behind the Cowboys in the Big 12 standings, and they're going to have to sprint down to finish. So I guess, Joe, you can take it either way. I mean, I kind of focused on TCU there. Florida State, on the other hand, picked up another big series win. They've been great in non-conference play, not as good in ACC play, but their RPI into the top 10 now, and that's a big deal. On the other hand, they're only 11-10 in the ACC, and they're going to need to fix that if they do expect to host. But this is the kind of series that is going to give them some margin for error and probably get a regional in Tallahassee.
Yeah, it was dealing with them in the top 25 was a weird deal last night, just to clue the listeners in, because, you know, impressive two-game sweep against what we had as a top 10 team with TCU coming into the weekend. So we have to reward them for that. But also, yeah, 11-10 in the ACC. It feels like a team that's kind of like careened back and forth kind of wildly this season. And just the weekend prior was seen losing a series to Clemson, which is, you know, one of the bottom teams in the ACC. So not quite sure what to make there, but what we saw of Florida State this weekend just kind of goes to show, like, when they are swinging the bat well, they are going to be really difficult to beat. Now, that has not been a all the time thing or even a most of the time thing for FSU. That's been the struggle. But you know, when they swing the bat well, they're going to be really tough, even when Parker Messick doesn't pitch quite as well as he did this weekend, because 7 shutout and 14 Ks. I mean, even though he's done that kind of thing quite a bit this season, you can't bank on that every time out. But when you score 10 runs, you give yourself a lot of margin there. And then even in the second game, you know, you get big hits and seven runs is just going to win you a lot of games with the pitching staff Florida State has. So they showed the upside there. They just, to your point, they just kind of need to win some ACC games, you know. That's going to be the big thing for them down the stretch, is, you know, and they've got a series with Boston College coming up this weekend, and that should on paper be helpful. They end the season with North Carolina, even though it is on the road. Like, so there are opportunities there for them to win enough games to get in a position to do all of that. It went poorly enough for TCU.
But quickly, they're also only 4-8 away from home. And so this weekend against BC is massive for them. They have an opportunity to pick up some ACC wins because they're playing the last place team in the conference, and they have the opportunity to make that road record look better. And I think both of those are hugely important. I'm not going to sit here and say they need a sweep. I never say that, but it would help.
Yeah, no doubt. One other thing on Florida State too, like, it, I kind of liked some of the things I saw in the bullpen there. They've moved Ross Dunn to a bullpen role, and he was electric behind Messick. Now those are low intensity innings because they were up big, and so he can really, you know, kind of air it out and just pound the strike zone, but man, did he look good. And so perhaps that, you know, that's a way to kind of repurpose a guy who was excellent the first 6 weeks or so of the season and has been less so lately. Wyatt Crowell also with a really nice outing in the second game of the series, so that's a big development there. So you like some of that there. I was going to say with TCU, I mean, this week, I guess, if you include the Dallas Baptist loss, Dallas Baptist, this went poorly enough that I had kind of forgotten they beat Oklahoma State 2 out of 3 the previous week on the road. Like, truthfully, you know, that slipped from my mind so quickly because of how poorly this weekend went. And it just, you know, considering having to fly out to Tallahassee, it's at a conference, like, it probably feels a little bit weird to be doing that. And then to get outscored 17-3 in 2 losses. And then, oh, by the way, you're like in a third game, and to have it get canceled, that just has to feel kind of crappy. So they have this week off, which will probably be helpful before they play Oklahoma this weekend. So, but just not a good couple of days. And sometimes that happens, but and it feels like it with these mid-season out of conference series, it feels like this kind of thing happens more often, where it's because there typically are a little more travel curfew situations and less motivation to get games in because they're not conference games. So I get it, but it does feel like these kinds of series sometimes end this way, where it's just like, well, I don't really know what to do with that. But good week in Florida State, still a lot of work to do there. The good news for TCU is that if you can shake this off, like, they did just beat Oklahoma State 2 weekends ago, despite me kind of forgetting it. So all the big picture stuff is still there.
And they swept Texas Tech the week before that, 5-1 against Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, and then this happened.
Yeah, and you have Oklahoma at home, and then Kansas the weekend after that. Winning the Big 12 titles right there, you go 5-1 against those two teams. Like, you have to feel pretty good about it, even with Oklahoma State playing a little bit better, because you have the tiebreaker, and because Oklahoma State, by virtue of having to play Texas Tech down the stretch, has a little more of a difficult path.
This was also a real missed opportunity for TCU in terms of RPI. They could use a boost. If they don't win the Big 12, their RPI is not going to be good enough to host. They have some opportunity. I think if they win enough to win the Big 12, the RPI will kind of take care of itself, and they'll get rewarded a little bit for having won the Big 12. But they missed an opportunity here with some road games in Tallahassee. All right, let's go back to the ACC. One other big result here to talk about, and that is Georgia Tech and Miami played this one in Atlanta. Georgia Tech won a 3-1 pitcher's duel on Friday night. That's not something we talk about Georgia Tech doing all that much this year. They're definitely more on the offensive end. They come back, they win on Saturday to clinch the series against the Canes. The Canes then came out and won in a rout kind of on Sunday to salvage the series. But this is a really big deal for Georgia Tech in a lot of different ways. They now have series wins against Miami, Virginia Tech, both top 10 teams there. They just have so many good wins here on this resume. In the top 25, they have 15 wins against top 50 RPI teams. Only Tennessee has that many. Nobody has more, and only Tennessee can match that. On the other hand, they have a bunch of losses that aren't great. So they're kind of in a weird spot, but this gets them back to 500 in the ACC. There were some big developments in terms of on-field stuff for Georgia Tech that we can get to here. And for Miami, they're now in a bit of a mini slide. So we'll get to them here as well. But Joe, Georgia Tech back into the top 25 after this. And I don't know, all kinds of intrigue and series wins against Florida State, Georgia, Miami, and Virginia Tech. I mean, it's that's pretty loud.
Yeah, impressive stuff there. I mean, they snuck their way back into the top 25 because you look at just an even 500 in the ACC and you don't think that screams top 25. But then you their quality series wins, you stack up there against just about anybody in the country. So they ended up getting in just largely on the strength of that. And the RPI has been trying to help them. You know, the RPI has been good the whole way. It's just a matter of, are they going to win enough to back up the RPI and be able to host? But the metrics have been trying. So there is that. The thing about Georgia Tech is just, you know, they because the pitching is what it is, it can't on the whole, it's tough to trust it. You know what they are. Their thing on the mound is more like, we just need to find as many arms as we can that we can trust as possible, right? And so, like, they know on the back end they trust Zach Maxwell. With the way they use him, it seems like they trust Dawson Brown as a reliever. The rotation, it's a little harder to come by that trust, but John Medich has been pretty good the last 2 weeks, and he's a guy who used pretty sparingly before that. Last year was used in a bit role. I believe he's like a Division III transfer up. I think Danny Hall, when he was in the podcast.
That's correct. He is a Division III transfer. He's this year's version of, who is the Texas Tech guy?
Patrick Monteverde.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and he, you know, Medich was on the team last year and was just kind of like, he didn't really get used in much. Now, Georgia Tech had a couple of guys with name is this guy, Brand Herter. Andy Archer was pretty solid last year. So like they had more definition on the pitching staff last year, I feel like. So anyway, regardless, the thing here is that, like, is he going to be, you know, a real dude like for them? And like, I would bet probably not, but like, I guess you can say over the last few weeks, they have found one other guy that they're at least going to give some trust to. And when you're Georgia Tech and you know you're probably going to be able to score runs against most anybody in the country, it's really just kind of about, let's find as many innings as we can. And so if this is a guy who can give you 4, 5, 6 quality innings with an eye towards a regional, like, you'll take that. And so it's baby steps for the Georgia Tech pitching staff, because it is such a chaotic situation from week to week that, hey, if this is a guy that we can ride a hot hand on and hope that hand stays hot all the way into June, then so be it. I did not have John Medich as being that kind of guy on my bingo card, but lo and behold, here it is with back-to-back good starts for him.
John Medich had pitched out of the bullpen all season long until last week against Duke, when they moved him in on the Saturday spot. He gave up 2 runs in 5 2/3. And then today, or this weekend rather, he 1 run in 6 innings, goes toe-to-toe with Carson Palmquist on Friday night. And I mean, it's a significant development. It also was significant that he's pitching on Friday and Chance Huff got moved to Sunday, trying to get Chance Huff right. He was not great on Sunday. That's part of the reason why they lost. But, you know, Georgia Tech can score with anyone. You're right. They just got to find enough outs to cover it. And they're in an interesting position here. You know, the RPI is really strong. Like, they have the high end wins. They're going to need more consistency over the next month to do whatever they want to do, no matter whether we're talking about hosting or just setting themselves up for success in the postseason. They need to find more consistency in the final month of the season. They go and they play Clemson on the road this weekend. That's going to be a really good test for that. Clemson is a team that can beat you, but they also only have 6 ACC wins for a reason. So if you're trying to be the kind of team that can host, that can do things in the NCAA tournament, you need to go out and win this. You need to build on what you did this weekend if you're Georgia Tech. So I'm very interested to now see them go play at Clemson. Miami, on the flip side, you might remember they started the year 27-6. They like took firm control of the ACC race. And now they've lost two of their last three series. They've lost four. Before Sunday's win, they lost four straight games. And Joe, that is their longest losing streak since?
I mean, probably some point late last year, right?
2019.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that was rough, losing four straight there before getting back on track on Sunday. Their RPI has slipped as a result. They're still in first place in the ACC, but Louisville and Virginia Tech have both closed ground. Louisville leading the other division, Virginia Tech in Miami's own division. So all of a sudden here, they've become pretty inconsistent on offense. If you look at the raw numbers over the last 3 weeks, they've scored 57 runs in three ACC series. So 57 runs in nine games is pretty solid, except that 30 of those runs have come in just two games. They won both of those games, of course. But in the other seven games, they're averaging 3.86 runs per game and they're 2-5. And I mean, I guess you could point to some other things, but for me, those numbers are pretty stark. They need to find a way to consistently get this offense going, because otherwise, you know, right now, Carson Ligon, who wasn't great again on Saturday, you know, he just isn't as good as he was early in the season. We talked about this. Carson Palmquist is not the kind of guy that's going to give you nine innings. You know, they need their offense to help them out, because otherwise the pitching staff just has to be too fine. And right now they're not in that space.
Yeah. You've hit on it there. I mean, even as they've gotten a little bit better stuff from Alejandro Rosario in the latter portion of the season, like they're asking a lot of a bullpen that still isn't, I think it's better than where it was last year, even taking Palmquist out of the equation, but that still isn't, any bullpen is getting taxed to that degree is not going to be a good path to victory and doing the kind of things they need to do. And you're right on about the offense. And it's one of the toughest things to kind of sort out and figure out how to talk about, just because it's like, yeah, the offense isn't producing, but like they've produced in a couple of games, and what's the difference? And it's like, I don't know. Like, it just is kind of a mystery. Like, it feels like we're never good in baseball about talking through like why an offense isn't hitting when some other games they do and some they don't. Like, it's just kind of baseball sometimes is as much of an art as it is a science. And so there isn't necessarily an explanation for every little thing. But that's where they are right now. And, you know, I think we could kind of see some of this coming, right? I mean, it's, you know, we knew coming into the season, like, if Yohandy Morales isn't like a superstar, and oh, by the way, he's been very, very good this year. But if it's not that, then where is it going to come from? And it feels like maybe they overperformed for a little while this season, and now maybe it's hitting them in the face again. I don't know. I think you could also point at, you know, Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, those series were on the road. This team plays a lot better at home. The good news, bad news of that is, you know, you've got Florida State on the road coming up in a couple of weeks, but then you get Notre Dame at home to end the season. And so they're splitting their final two ACC series road and home. And maybe that's all it is here. I mean, there's a lot of teams in college baseball this year with that kind of situation going on. And maybe that's ultimately where the buck stops. Of course, that makes it vitally important that Miami gets things in gear a little bit and ends up playing at home.
They absolutely need to use this week to get right. They go home. They play North Dakota State. North Dakota State, I believe, is still leading the Summit League. I should have looked that up. But they're a feisty team. They're a team that Miami should be taking care of this weekend. But if Miami doesn't take it seriously, doesn't come to play, North Dakota State is a kind of team that can cause them problems. And they really need this weekend to get right before that rivalry series in Tallahassee, because closing against Florida State and Notre Dame, like, those are two teams that can hurt you as well. Those are two really good teams. Miami is going to need to be playing at or near the top of its game. So things have gotten closer in the ACC than maybe I expected a couple of weeks ago, when it looked like Miami was going to kind of cruise through. But it is, they're now facing some adversity, and I'll be interested to see how they handle this going down the stretch run.
Helpfully, North Dakota State top 100 RPI. So for Miami hosting, it is helpful that NDSU is not rolling in there with a 175 RPI, which was entirely possible when they scheduled that series.
Indeed, yes. All right. So those were kind of the big headliner series. There was a lot else that happened this weekend. So I'm going to throw a lot of stuff at Joe here, and then we're going to roll with whatever we want to take from here. So LSU won a series against Georgia. LSU now back into the top 25. They walked off with that series win. Cade Doty hit a 2-run homer in the ninth on Sunday to give LSU a 4-3 win and, in a rubber game and therefore win the series. Wofford, Georgia Southern, and Southern Miss all lost series. And that has various levels of implications in the title races and in hosting stuff for those teams. I will say Mercer now is in first place in the SoCon. We talked about how Wofford was in control of that conference a week ago after they went to Mercer and won a series. Well, much like that Big 12 series race, the SoCon flipped in a hurry. Now you're looking at a sprint to the finish between Mercer and Wofford. Washington upset Stanford. Upset the apple cart a little bit there in the Pac-12, not terribly so, but a tough series loss for Stanford, which loses the series on a walk-off wild pitch in extra innings in a rubber game. Not what you want there. UCSB and Cal Poly, we talked about that in the preview podcast. UCSB went out and swept Cal Poly at Cal Poly for the first time since 1998. You can start the countdown to UCSB's second Big West title in the last three seasons. They have a 6-game lead. The magic number is 5. The Gauchos are into the top 25 for the first time this season. A&M beat Vanderbilt in a series that sure makes it look like there might be a College Station regional. Louisville swept Clemson, and that's notable because it's going to be really hard for Clemson to continue its surge back towards trying to get to regionals. Southeast Missouri State beat Belmont in a key OVC series. Army wrapped up the Patriot League regular season title. Ball State swept Central Michigan. We talked about that in the preview podcast. Ball State now into first place in the MAC. And Columbia extended its winning streak to 19 games. That's the longest active streak in the country. And it booked its place in the Ivy League Championship Series. Joe, take that where you want it.
Yeah, a lot of stuff there. Quickly, SEMO plays Oklahoma State this weekend. SEMO has a top 50 RPI. If they get a game in Stillwater, which is not off the table, if they get a game in Stillwater, it might be interesting. We'll see. I did not expect that RPI to hang around, and it did. So good on the Red Hawks. That's that there. Yeah, Stanford, tough series loss against Washington. Stanford, I think, is just going to be a weird team this year. They are not dissimilar from a team like Georgia Tech. All the pitching is better, but once they get to Sunday, things get real dicey in the bullpen for Stanford. And I watched them, cycle through about a million guys on Sunday trying to figure it out, and they just never got it figured out. So that was tough to watch there. Not a good weekend for non-traditional hosts. You mentioned it. We kind of toyed around with the idea of Wofford hosting, and Southern Miss is still probably in decent shape if it finishes well and ends up dominating the Conference USA. But, not a good weekend for kind of the rest of that group. Georgia Southern, obviously, in that mix. So there's that there. You mentioned A&M maybe being in the host race, TCU also fighting to get in that position. By the way, their prize for hosting a regional might be getting Texas State as their number two. So have fun with that, gentlemen. Texas State continues to, despite its RPI, not really moving all that much, like in working on a thin margin. Like Texas State is kind of on the way to controlling the Sun Belt at this point.
And Texas State now available too, because there's probably not going to be an Austin regional, and they had been like locked into that one. But now College Station or TCU or someone is going to end up with them. And the other one is DBU, since DBU probably isn't hosting. Like, that's who you're looking at as your two seed there. And I mean, maybe a chance that one of them goes to Stillwater, but
not comfortable matchups there. And the last thing is LSU and Georgia. I mean, at this point, LSU just kind of is what they are, right? I mean, they haven't really figured out the defensive stuff. They're still hitting. The pitching is better because they've kind of gone with this volume play. I don't think you can overstate how important Mikhail Hilliard has been for them kind of steadying the ship on the mound. And Georgia, if they don't get great, now they won a game in which Jonathan Cannon didn't pitch great, but generally speaking, like with them, being what they are, if they don't get a great version of Jonathan Cannon or some other kind of pitching performance, there's just doesn't feel like there's a lot to really cling to, even though that team has been really solid this year.
On Southern Miss, I would say right now they're fine to host, but the problem is they lost to UAB. UAB is one of the good middle of the road teams in CUSA. The CUSA schedule probably only stiffens from here for Southern Miss. They finish with ODU, UTSA, and at Middle Tennessee State. All three of those teams are as good or better than UAB, I would say. So Southern Miss needs to get back on track if they intend to host. And right now, if it ended today, I think they have a hosting resume. But just what this weekend signals is that they are not unbeatable. There are Conference USA teams that can beat them, and they're going to play three more of them this season. So the good news is that, like, if they win those games, RPI is going to stay solid, and they'll be good. Bad news is those are 9 losable games, I would say. All right, we covered a lot of ground here on the Baseball America College podcast today. A very busy weekend, like we said. There's plenty more to read over on the website. You can check out the full top 25 there. With Joe's write-ups, you can check out Off the Bat. There will be plenty more throughout the week, as well as, again, we are into May. Selection Monday is like a month away. Thank God it's not a week away. Plenty more college baseball to be played, and we'll have it all covered for you over at baseballamerica.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And we will be back here with another edition of the Baseball America College podcast on Thursday as we preview week 12. Sneak peek of that, Oregon and Oregon State. They're playing their series, that rivalry series. That's a big one out in the Pac-12. And, some other exciting series around the country, including that Auburn and Arkansas series that we mentioned early on. So a lot of good action as we get into the first full weekend of May in college baseball. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Hit the subscribe, the follow button, whatever the nomenclature is. And we come into your phone twice a week during the season. And again, Mondays and Thursdays, Mondays with the recap, Thursdays with the preview. So we really appreciate all of our subscribers to the podcast here. All right, Joe, that's going to do it for us. For Joe, I'm Teddy. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.